This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Raise Your Game. I'm Christine Wong, and on the line with me today is Lydia Lee, self-professed freedom instigator and creator of Screw the Cubicle, a website dedicated to work reinvention and helping people who feel trapped in the 9-to-5s find an escape.
I am a work reinvention coach, and I'm also a small business strategist. And I help corporate professionals really hone in on their genius zone to start an independent career or a business that's designed from their strengths, their values, and their personality. So Screw the Cubicle is a very location-independent business for me. So currently, I'm calling you here from Bali. I'm originally from Vancouver, Canada, and I run my business sort of everywhere around the world every year. So I think this idea of location-independent lifestyles, but also a location-independent business to earn money while we live our lives, you know, that has been sort of a website and a resource, and of course, a business I've had for 7 years, really educating and training people to do that.
And you actually have your own experience with moving from corporate to a location-independent experience. This happened when you were in Moscow. When you were in a corporate position, you had a discovery. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yes, this happened about 8 years ago now, and this was kind of my breakdown that allowed me to have a bit of a breakthrough in terms of, you know, where I envisioned my life. But basically, I was working in the international education at the time. I was 27 years old at the time and was working about 60-hour weeks because I was a director in business development for the company. And, you know, even though the role looked really sexy on paper, you know, I got to travel 6 months out of the year. I was in international traveling, but really a lot of my values in terms of being close to family, you know, having a relationship, all those things wasn't really happening in my life. And to be honest, you know, it was one of those jobs that were so high pressure that I wasn't actually taking a holiday at all. Even though I was allowed to take holidays every year, I would actually kind of forfeit it and instead get paid out, you know, for the holiday time because I didn't want to worry about my department when I was gone on holiday. So as you can imagine, Christine, if you work like that for years to come without a break, it's just, you know, about time that a breakdown kind of happened. So my moment kind of happened when I was on a business trip with the government of Canada over in Moscow in Russia. And I actually developed such a breakdown in my hotel room about to go out for my appointments for the day. I've been jet lagged. I've been traveling for probably about, you know, 3 weeks at that time. And I developed temporary agoraphobia, which if you don't know what that is just not being able to leave the room. I had a panic attack that felt like a heart attack. And that was very scary to have this happen to me in a foreign country. But it was also a long time coming in the sense of my physical body was now catching up to the mental unwellness. I was feeling with burnout, you know, depression at the time, and with just that whole, you know, cooker pressure world of the industry I was in. Even though that moment was a very, very difficult moment for me personally, I think it was the catalyst, you know, for change that I needed. And that was sort of what propelled me to investigate whether or not everything that I was doing and experiencing and what I defined as success in my life was actually really leading me to a life experience I want to have. And if the answer is no, I better get to work to figure that out because this was not going to be the last time I was going to have a burnout.
Right. It kind of sounds like the faster your momentum was, the harder it was for you to stop.
For sure. And to be honest, at the time, Christine, I was being offered, you know, what I call like a carrot, you know, to stay. And one of the things that was being offered to me at the time was partnership at this company. And at that age, to be offered partnership, I was the youngest director, right? The youngest person in a management role in that company. And so that felt like such a success. But I also knew that nothing would change just because I got a promotion, just because I got more money, doesn't mean that the way I was working would change. If anything, it probably will get a lot messier. I think also as, so you may not know this about me, but my family immigrated to Canada when I was very young at 8 years old. I'm from Penang, Malaysia. And one of the hardest things that I had to do, you know, when I acknowledged that I wasn't going to stay at this job, I wanted to do something of my very own, have autonomy over my time, have autonomy over what I work on. Even telling my mother, you know, that trajectory was not where I was going to continue to go. That was a really hard thing, kind of shameful and guilty to feel, because my family gave up so much and sacrificed so much for me to have an education. All of that identity crisis, I think, really comes with the minute you take that leap, the minute you do something unconventional and not in the status quo, which maybe, you know, some people are feeling that way themselves as they go through change at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Change in status quo has obviously been taking place all over the world in light, of course, of the COVID-19 pandemic. For you, as someone who is already location independent, you know, did you feel that you were at almost a sort of advantage in this kind of situation?
Well, you know, I think that I definitely have been mentally prepared for change a lot more than who I was 8 years ago. You know, when something bad happened or something went off tracks, I think I would have taken it a lot more harshly. Being someone that's been location independent and something that is a lifestyle choice in a lot of ways, my partner and I travel a lot every single year to look for multiple home bases that we want to raise a family in, you know, and places that we want to call home and how we define home. And so I'm always in a lot of way in a flux of change. You know, I'm learning new languages. I'm staying in new neighborhoods. I got to find out where the new grocery stores are. You know, I'm always in change. And so in a lot of ways, when this pandemic hit, even though it did very much personally affect my own business, you know, where people needed a break, people needed a pause, and they didn't have time to think about their future. They only needed to focus on making sure there's food on the table, a shelter over their heads, and that their job security was there. They weren't investing as much in the beginning of this pandemic. So that affected my business, of course, inaugurally. And I had to adapt to those change. I had to pivot, you know, in a lot of ways to be able to serve the marketplace in a way that helps them with the circumstance that they're actually dealing with. But yeah, my own entire lifestyle change. I work from home. I work with international clients. That has not changed, being online and being virtual. But definitely what changes I've had to experience is actually learning how to adapt my business to actually serve new needs and new demands, really, in the world that we're currently living in.
Right. So what were some of those new demands from your clients during the lockdown?
So what I found that had been a really helpful service for people contemplating, you know, maybe they had one foot out the door to begin with, even before the pandemic hit. They wanted to do something different. They don't know what that is, but, you know, they're still kind of safety in a jobs, insecure in their jobs. And then now with people that were being told, right, that the company's cutting down funds, you know, we may not be able to make it to the next quarter, right? All these sorts of insecure, uncertain times have caused people to actually really need that emotional support to make decisions, you know, making choices and planning for the future when it's really hard to plan right now, you know, not knowing what's going to happen to the world, to our health, to everything. Nothing is going back to normal. And how do I then make a decision from this place? And so actually, instead of a lot of the work that I was doing, really from starting people in that strategizing mode of, right, repurposing or redeploying their skills into an online business, what I really focused on was more around the transition plan. What can we control right now, right? Instead of worrying about the future, what can I control in my actions and in my decisions right now and not wait for when I get fired or wait for when potential layoffs might happen or wait for when funding stops and actually start to look at what can I do? How can I use this time for good where I'm proactively creating opportunities for myself? What do I no longer want to even go back to after all this is over anyway? Like, kind of take this time instead of a doom and gloom is to look at it as a silver lining. Well, you know, everyone else starts from the ground up again, and I don't need to compare myself to other people. And if I can reset and rejuvenate again, what would I now want? You know, and so that became more of the point of conversation, the point of support. And it wasn't that, you know, they needed to have a business right after this. Sometimes they don't. They might actually want to find a different type of job or a different way of delivering, you know, their expertise, maybe in a way that they haven't done before, but this was their catalyst, you know, to now evolve their body of work in a different manner.
So would you say that over the course of the past couple of months, you've noticed that more of your clients have been seeking some form of flexibility or sort of freedom, I guess, that they may not have been brave enough to try before?
Absolutely. You know, for a long time, people, even though they would admire the fact that I did not have an office space or I didn't have, you know, a location-dependent business, in the back of their minds, they have excuses and obstacles in the way. Sometimes they'll say to me, well, I'm a parent and I can't do that. You know, I can't work from home. But there are always options like co-working spaces. There are other areas of how you can work without being in the home. In a lot of ways, sometimes people think about boundaries at home. You know, I won't be able to pay attention and focus if there's dirty dishes in, you know, the sink. How do I keep and maintain my professionalism while working from home? But now that with the whole COVID-19 circumstance where we've all been forced to work from home. And in a lot of ways, we've seen our own resilience and our own ways of adaptation, you know, to adapt what we used to do in the office to a virtual way. I mean, Zoom, Skype, whatever it is that we've, you know, learned how to use, how to communicate, how to present, how to teach what we know, right? Delivering our work online. All of a sudden, this is a very teachable tool, teachable skill, and people have adapted a lot more easily than they thought, you know. So some of those limiting beliefs that is the, I don't think I could do that because of X, Y, and Z is kind of no longer in the way because they've had to do it and they've had to experience it. And I think once they've experienced it, now the possibility of making this more of a full-time thing or doing this beyond, you know, even when COVID-19 may not be a reality anymore, is now a better motivation for them to do so.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds a lot like necessity was the mother of invention in a lot of ways. And a lot of the barriers that people had in their minds for remote working or working from home or whatever you want to call it were eradicated by COVID-19 and the reality of having to just immediately become more flexible as a result. But it's time for a short break now. Afterwards, I will continue speaking to Lydia Lee. So for more of that conversation, do stay tuned to Raise Your Game here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bring forth Moolah, BFM 89.9.
I'm Christine Wong and you are listening to Raise Your Game. Today I'm speaking to freedom instigator and work reinvention strategist Lydia Lee, creator of Screw the Cubicle. So before the break, we were talking a bit about what that is, why she started it, and also the effect that COVID-19 has had on people's perceptions of location-independent work and remote work and working from home as well. Before the break, you were talking a little bit about some of the barriers and obstacles that people said that they were facing in terms of working from home, things like setting boundaries, things like having kids who may not understand, you know, their parent is at work, even though they are not physically at work. You know, so for those kinds of barriers, what sort of advice do you have?
Yeah, you know, it all depends on the space that you have. And I think as times are changing for different cities and different countries of how much access, right, we have to environments outside of our house, as I mentioned before, you know, co-working spaces are a great resource, right, where you can meet other remote workers, meet other independent business owners, and be able to still have a network and almost kind of a water cooler, you know, environment that they miss sharing ideas, collaboration, but still being able to have a quiet space and a productive space to work. Now, you know, I don't live in a huge house either. And in a lot of ways, I've had to adapt myself, you know, to working from home with a partner that is kind of semi-retired at the moment. And so we've had to have very specific negotiations and conversations with each other about when it's working time, what sort of responsibilities we have to each other throughout the day, and assign particular rooms of the house, you know, where maybe there's a symbol, like if we put a sign on the door or if this door is locked, mommy and daddy are no longer available, you know, and maybe have to negotiate parent care, right, and child care in between those times. But also with a lot of tools that are available for people these days, even things like noise canceling apps, right, that allows you to have a conversation with your team, with your boss. And if your babies are screaming in the background, these apps will cancel those noises. So that eliminates, again, that embarrassment, right, of having children kind of running around the house behind. But I think one of the most important parts of learning here is actually having to be able to structure your time, you know, having to create a container, you know, for work where you are not just working for half an hour and then going to do the dishes or the laundry for the next half an hour. That sort of, you know, distraction or ways of just not being productive, those are things that, to be honest, also plagues people at the office, you know, when you have an open floor plan and people come in there to interrupt you, you don't get your flow of work going, right? So being able to kind of analyze how you like to work, what sort of, you know, some people work in sprints, some people work only can work in a short sprint for an hour, then they need to take a break. Whatever it works for you, this is now an opportunity for us to see, how do I like to work? What sort of environment do I need to create for myself that allows me to feel productive? You know, what times of the day am I best at working as well, depending on my personality? So those are how we can help ourselves to make working from home work for us.
Right. And on the other side of things, a lot of people have been experiencing a dissolution of boundaries where when they were going to the office for their 9-to-5, they were able to, purely do work in the office and purely relax at home. But now that home has become the office for a lot of people, they have been finding it very difficult to separate those boundaries and to be able to stop work or to say no to a request coming in from work. And you also work with a lot of international clients, so I must imagine time zones must be an issue with requests for work and things like that. So what advice would you have for those kinds of people?
Yes. And, you know, those healthy boundaries we need to set whether or not we are working for ourselves or working in the office. And I think we do train people how to treat us. You know, if you're always available 24/7 and people know you're answering emails at 10 p.m., well, they're going to email you and they're going to expect an answer because that's been the pattern of behavior. And so I think in a lot of ways, technology has been a blessing in our lives, but it's also have been a deterrent, you know, in how we live in a quality of the life that we want, because we're always on in some way, whether we're on social media or on in our emails. So one of the things that we have to really take control of is really parenting ourselves, you know, not to have access to things like our emails being able to notify us every time an email comes into our apps, right? Like we can shut that off. We can shut off that notification. We can even have an automated reply that will say, I work from these hours to this hour. Here's when I check my emails. Expect a reply within this amount of time. If it's urgent and it can't wait till tomorrow, then this might be the only way to do it, right? You kind of instruct people what your boundaries are, what is healthy and actually more efficient way for you to actually be able to work with them. But it starts with our own acceptance that this is what we want, you know, and that we're not proving to other people that being available all the time means that I'm productive. If anything, I'm actually reserving my energy, ensuring that I'm actually focused and productive so that I can meet deadlines and be a much better, you know, employee or a better support system for my clients when I'm able to have these boundaries.
Now, you know, you do a lot of work with a wide variety of clients in terms of work reinvention. But I just wanted to ask, can anybody screw the cubicle?
Well, it is a choice, isn't it? And not, I wouldn't say that, you know, the whole thing of being an entrepreneur is for everybody. But one of the things that I mean when I say screw the cubicle, and what the whole mission and message behind screw the cubicle is, it's not literally that the only way that you'll be happy and joyful and successful is if you quit your job. That's not actually what I really mean. You know, what I mean by screw the cubicle is really about thinking out of the box, thinking out of the traditional trajectory of what it is that our parents have told us or what society has told us is the only way to gain happiness and success, right? Mm-hmm. And now that we live in a very modern day world where we can collaborate, we can share, we can work in ways that our parents never had the chance to do so, is to take advantage of that opportunity and get really creative about how we earn a living. Some of my clients never want to be a business owner. They don't have any interest in being an entrepreneur. They want security in some ways, right? And to them, it's not about working for themselves, but sometimes screw the cubicle, what it means for them is having autonomy over their work. They're creatives. They're people that want to work on projects and the types of outcomes that they can stand behind and be proud of their work. And that's their screw the cubicle moment. They might become a freelancer. They might work in a remote job. They could still be employed in a lot of ways, but it's changing about, again, how they offer their work. And then for others, I think it's choices around even picking the right types of jobs or the business types that actually align with the kind of lifestyle choices they want. We don't think about that because we think about, well, we enjoy ourselves at 65 when we retire, right? That's when we care about our lives. But in a lot of ways, we're not going to make it to retirement in one piece if we're going to be hustling and breaking down and burning out every other year you know, in order to survive the workaholic hustle mentality that we may believe is what causes success. And so it's about having this mindfulness and conscious choices of whatever work we pick or the projects we belong to or even the company we decide to work for. Do these values and cultural values align with me and how I want to work and how I want to do my work? And hopefully a lot of these choices allow me to live that quality of life that I want.
Hmm. You mentioned that some of your clients are not necessarily self-employed as well. I mean, what advice or thoughts do you have for employers who maybe have an employee come up to them and say, hey, look, I've been thinking about it and I really want to reinvent and rethink about how I do work, whether that's working remotely or whether that's taking on a different responsibility or approaching things in a different way. How can an employer respond to that?
Well, employers have a really interesting opportunity right now to really assess and measure what causes an employee to be happy. And I think all of us can agree that a happy employee just does better output, right? They produce better results. And so happiness in the workplace is certainly a mission that I think employers should definitely be thinking about, because at the bottom line of everything, this is going to be valuable to their corporation. Thinking about observing and listening, you know, to employees that will say, this is the sort of way that I can work to be happier, but also in return, be able to produce better results. And how do we trial? You know, I love the idea of experimentation, because in a lot of ways, we did that a lot, right? When we got out of college or university, we did a lot of internships, didn't we? You know, in order to figure out what we want to do with our lives, right? Or where in the sectors of an industry we want to belong. And I think there's an art of internship or art of experimentation that can be taken on as a tool to test out whether or not, you know, some of the fears we have about letting people work from home or letting people decide on their hours or decide how they want to do their work. Does it truly give me the outcomes my company needs? Well, we don't know till we try. We don't know till we actually observe and listen and understand how each individual, what motivates each individual, and give it a certain amount of time, whether it's a month, 2 months, or 3 months, to test out and go, is this actually going to work? And how can I do this in smaller bite-sized experiments rather than a large bite of a new initiative that might make it very fearful for us to start doing that for every single employee? You know, but bottom line is that I think we have to treat our employees as they're individuals, which are driven, and they're people, right? They're driven and motivated by different things, you know? And so once we understand what motivates that person and let them have the autonomy to actually go, if you were to build your own role, if you were to be able to work and discipline yourself, what would that look like? Let them be the answer and then trial it out. And I think sometimes you might be very surprised about how things can change when we collaborate with our employees to make those changes.
Right. And I think especially now in this period where people are slowly getting back to business after, you know, this time of remote working and working from home, it's the perfect time to start trying something like that as well.
Absolutely. And as people start to go back out into the world, or sometimes who knows what can happen in the next quarter, if they need to work from home again, you know, in 3 months' time, well, in a lot of ways, we've helped them to adapt to this way of working and that it doesn't feel like such a shock as well. You know, so I really, really think there is a bit of a silver lining in all of this where all of a sudden, every single corporation, every single business is really challenged to adapt, you know, and to pivot our ways to serve, you know, our audiences and marketplaces and customers in a different way. And customers are also adapting, you know, in how they are given services, right? How they are consuming information. And all of that is changing whether we like it or not. And I think the difference is how well we're adapting to those needs.
Fantastic. All right, Lydia, you have a book where you've interviewed people from all walks of life that chose to screw the cubicle. Where can people find it? And also, if people want to get in touch with you personally as well, how can they do that?
Yeah, I do have a book coming out later on this year in 2020, as we're speaking. And to find out more about the book, you can go to screwthecubicle.com/book. And to find out more about all the different ways that you can start reinventing your work, whether it's in self-employment or to just figure out what's next for my new chapter of work, just go to screwthecubicle.com. Right there on the homepage, there are several free resources. I run really in-depth trainings for people that are going through corporate transition or people that are figuring what business should I start based on my skills and my passions, and how do I get started with something that's independent, and how to prepare myself mentally for self-employment. All those resources are available right on the homepage on screwthecubicle.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for speaking to me today, Lydia.
Thank you, Christine, for having me.
All right. You have been listening to Raise Your Game on BFM 89.9. If you miss any of this interview, you can catch the podcast on our website, bfm.my, or our app that is available on the Apple App Store or Google Play. You can also catch us on Spotify. You're listening to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.